And welcome to a cold, chilly morning and rainy at my house this morning and yesterday. So
the
spring
day before and the day before.
I think fall has fallen. Anyway, this is the September 16th, 2019 meeting of the Chelan County Public Utility District Commission. I'd like to thank everyone for coming this morning. And remind you that if you have any electronic devices with you this morning that might beep or bop or make any kind of noise, if you'd be kind enough at this time to hit the silence button, I would appreciate it. Today's meeting is both a study and a business session meeting. It appears, based on the agenda, that we might be able to conclude both of those sessions this morning and not have an afternoon session. So we'll see what the day looks like, but it sounds like we're pretty light on our agenda. Today's meetings are recorded, so I'd like to remind anyone who has an interest in addressing the commission, please step to the microphone on the table adjacent us here. Yes, please state your name and your address, please. And if you would be kind enough, limit your comments to 3 or 4 minutes. That would be appreciated. Today we have all five commissioners present. General Manager Steve Wright will be joining us here in just a short moment. Sitting in for us is Darren Nelson, who's going to join us and lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. And also, Darren, give us a safety minute. Thank you.
I pledge allegiance to the
flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So good morning. As Commissioner Arsenal said, my name is Darren Nelson. I'm the Contractor Safety Program Manager. I think I know most of you. I've had an opportunity to stand before you a couple times now and give you a safety moment, but today we're going to do an HPI moment. So I get to be a part of that team, which is under Tim Pettit, the safety team and HPI team. So I'd like to start off by showing you a video, but I have to preface this video that say it is a leadership video, but it's not a typical leadership video. It was a video that was taken at the Gorge in the summer with young people at a music festival. So again, it's a non-typical leadership video, but the content of the video is not quite as important as the context of the narration. So there will be a narrator talking you through the video. So if you listen more of what he's saying rather than the actions of the video simply lends to the content. So let's watch this and then I will finish it.
That's quite a lead.
If you've learned a lot about leadership and making a movement, then let's watch a movement happen start to finish in under 3 minutes and dissect some lessons. First, of course, a leader needs the guts to stand alone and look ridiculous. But what he's doing is so simple, it's almost instructional. This is key. You must be easy to follow. Now here comes the first follower with a crucial role. He publicly shows everyone else how to follow. Notice how the leader embraces him as an equal. So it's not about the leader anymore. It's about them, plural. Notice how he's calling to his friends to join in. See, it takes guts to be a first follower. You stand out and you brave ridicule yourself. Being a first follower is an underappreciated form of leadership. The first follower transforms a lone nut into a leader. If the leader is the flint, the first follower is the spark that really makes the fire. Now here's the second follower. This is a turning point. It's proof the first has done well. Now it's not a lone nut and it's not two nuts. Three is a crowd and a crowd is news. A movement must be public. Make sure outsiders see more than just the leader. Everyone needs to see the followers, because new followers emulate followers, not the leader. Now here come two more people, then three more immediately. Now we've got momentum. This is the tipping point, and now we have a movement. As more people jump in, it's no longer risky. If they were on the fence before, there's no reason not to join in now. They won't stand out, they won't be ridiculed, and they will be part of the in crowd if they hurry. And over the next minute, you'll see the rest who prefer to stay part of the crowd, because eventually they'd be ridiculed for not joining. And ladies and gentlemen, that is how a movement is made. So let's recap what we've learned. If you are a version of the shirtless dancing guy, all alone, remember the importance of nurturing your first few followers as equals, making everything clearly about the movement, not you. Be public, be easy to follow. But the biggest lesson here, did you catch it? leadership is over-glorified. Yes, it started with the shirtless guy, and he'll get all the credit. But you saw what really happened. It was the first follower that transformed a lone nut into a leader. There's no movement without the first follower. See, we're told that we all need to be leaders, but that would be really ineffective. The best way to make a movement, if you really care, is to courageously follow and show others how to follow. When you find a lone nut doing something great, have the guts to be the first person to stand up and join in.
So I told you that was a non-typical leadership video. But the gal at the end was saying, how did he do that? How did he do that? Well, he didn't do really anything except for be, well, we'll use courageous enough to stand up there and really, you know, create a scene. It wasn't until they got the first follower, the second follower, people who said, you know what, I want to be a part of this. And I'll tell you what, we've been doing this HPI journey for a while now, and sometimes I feel like the shirtless dance. I will keep my shirt on this morning for the benefit of all of us. But you feel like that. But we're finding first and second followers. We're getting people that say, hey, the things that you're talking about are resonating. I see how implementing some of those things can help in our processes. So we're looking for more first and second followers. We're looking for people to say, hey, I get these things. I know Tim has shared it. I will share it with you again. The things that we're learning, the things that I'm learning about human performance are helping me more in my personal life and who I am as a person, as a father, as a husband, as a leader. And those things I'm bringing back to work, which is helping me in my work life as well. But really, it's helping me understand how I work. You know, when you ask yourself, what is it about me that caused or allowed this to happen? Or what is it about the way that I am that allowed or caused this to happen? It really changes the dynamic at work when you can look at yourself and say, I'm kind of part of the problem here. You know, so I need to do this. I need to make these changes if I want to see changes, you know, around my job, my life, or whatever. So please, if you have any questions, if you want more information, I'd talk your ear off about this stuff. So thank you.
Darren, that's great.
Safety minute of the year.
Yeah.
That was great.
I think you ought to be in the suntan lotion business looking at that video.
Thank you. Oh, that was really great.
The lead in.
So, commissioners, we have in front of us a consent agenda. Any items on the regular agenda are subject to transfer to the consent agenda at a request of a commission member. Do I hear any such request? Hearing none, we will move on.
Okay, so I want to talk about something that I'm going to really enjoy talking about today. So this is CPO winner for the month, and it's someone that we all know and care about and has just done a tremendous job here. So this month's winner is Rebecca Garfine, as nominated by her peers. And I think we all recognize that incredible level of effort that she puts in and the ownership that she puts into this job, her willingness to identify needs that the organization has without being asked to go do things. She figures out what it is that will make us operate better, and then she goes and figures out ways to make it happen. There's a write-up here that was based on what the nominator suggested. I would say it's even bigger than what's described here. I think each one of us around this table can identify things where Rebecca has made an important contribution without being asked to do something, just figuring out something that would add value for us. So really, really pleased that she's been identified in this way by other folks within the organization, and couldn't be prouder of somebody than we are of Rebecca right now. So thank you for the great job you've done.
Thank you.
Very worthy. Yeah. Thank you.
So as you know, Rebecca sat here a bunch of times, so she knows the drill. She has the choice, the option, not the requirement. If you'd like to fix or something with the board.
It's a great place to be. I enjoy my job and my work every day, and glad to be here. Thank you.
And I was sharing with Ann before the meeting today. I said, we all know who really keeps things organized in our utility. It's not our manager.
Right.
Actually, that's not quite how he said it to me, but we'll leave it at that. Thank you, Rebecca.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
Thanks for all your effort.
I can't imagine managing Steve's schedule, let alone add in five Wiley commissioners who are completely independent. And, you know, you're so graceful and gracious in terms of how you handle our differences and bring us together and find those times when we can meet and try and work on our effectiveness. And that's a real skill set, and it's much appreciated. Thank you.
The phrase that comes to my mind is trying to herd a bunch of cats. And sometimes I think we as commissioners, simply because we're not here all the time, and you're tracking us down and keeping us on track. So thank you for all that you do.
Yeah, and we're not here in more ways than one.
So, good.
Good. All right, well, next up, another important step in the development of the most important thing we do, the development of the strategic plan. Justin Erickson will be describing the outreach efforts, public comment that we've received, and our path forward from here.
Okay, good morning, commissioners. Good morning. It's a pleasure to be with you. Justin Erickson, Managing Director of District Services. It was nearly a month ago that I was here before you, and we were on the precipice of releasing the draft plan, and so shortly after that meeting on the 19th, we did release the plan, make it available publicly, and do a number of outreach steps. So this morning I'd like to provide you an update on those comments received and where we're at. I thought I would start by just a quick overview of the planning process. We started this endeavor nearly a year ago. Today, really, I think you had a workshop in October that kind of set the stage, and then we presented to you an outreach plan and schedule in December of 2018. And then that kicked off a series of steps that you're very familiar with, but I just wanted to kind of recognize the process from a large community kickoff meeting to the establishment of topic teams to a couple of survey efforts, including a countywide effort where all 35,000 customer owners were able to weigh in to now this kind of final step in the process where we've got a draft plan and then a final opportunity for public review and comment. Including two open houses that we held recently, September 5th at the CTC here in Wenatchee, and September 9th at our building in Leavenworth. We also had a unique opportunity because the timing of our connected newsletter, where we were able to print that concurrent with the release of the draft plan to really help give one more opportunity for all 35,000 customer owners to be kind of pointed in the direction of the our publicpower.org website and our planning process. And we were also able to summarize, of course, the key actions in that document as well. So this is just a visual depiction that illustrates the steps in that process. We know that our customer owners are engaging with us differently, and you'll see that later on, because we open houses and things like that are not significantly well attended. So we wanted to have a robust website, digital video content. We made sure that all of our content was available in dual language as well, so that we could engage appropriately with our customer owners throughout the county. And so lots of effort and time went into these measures to make sure that we got the word out, were able to educate the public as well as get their questions answered. So, to quickly recap, we are left then with a draft strategic plan that has four strategic priorities in it, and you've seen these before, and I'm not suggesting any changes this morning, but certainly happy to discuss them with you, and I won't read these just in the interest of time because you've seen them before, but for the benefit of the public and maybe those that are here and those that have not seen these, I wanted to include them in the appendix to this presentation. I included the information that you've had previously, the key actions, and some of the context, should you need to refer back to that. Okay, jumping in now into the final public review. So, as I mentioned, we had this opportunity through the Connected newsletter. We presented the plan to you approximately a month ago, and then had additional outreach and media coverage. Overall, we had very few public comments, but we did have some comments that were received via email, and we did have a few that came in through the open houses. The open house the open houses. The information is there on the screen. So we had 12 participants in Wenatchee and four in Leavenworth, and a total of 13 written comments that were received. And we did receive one formal letter from the city of Rock Island, which is inclusive to the 13. This is an attempt to kind of summarize in a brief fashion the comments, and you have I did also include all of the comments in your packet, so hopefully you've had an opportunity to review those as well. I think what was interesting for me is the vast majority of comments that we received were in relation to fiber and the people that were desirable of more and expansive service. And so you'll see that indicated there by seven. I will note that I said earlier there was 13 comments received. Some individuals chose to comment on more than one topic, and so that's why there's more than 13 numerically represented here. We had a few comments on rates, as you might imagine. Two comments that expressed concern about the proposed rate increases. We had one comment that expressed support for the rate increase. We also had a comment that expressed support for the continued emphasis on paying down debt, and that the 3% helped support that as well. And then we had three comments that people indicated some fashion that they felt that the survey wasn't appropriately worded. So in some cases that was directly related to the rates question. In other cases, they just felt like we could have asked questions differently, or maybe all different questions altogether.
So Justin, just for reflection purposes, approximately how many pieces of input over the time of the planning process did we receive? How many thousand?
Yeah, I would, when you total the written comments on the countywide survey, as well as the random survey that was done for aesthetics and economic development, so combined, that would be over 4,000.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's impressive.
Wanted to comment specifically about the formal letter that we received from Mayor Agnew at the City of Rock Island. In that letter, Mayor Agnew expressed his desire to work with the PUD to support access to the Rock Island pool in or around the City of Rock Island. So wanted to mention that one more specifically. So next steps. I'm here before you this morning to summarize the comments received. This is also an opportunity for you to accept customer owner feedback directly, should there be anyone in the audience that would like to speak to you. Following that, then I would recommend that we discuss the draft plan further, if there's any proposed amendments or discussion points that you'd like to have relative to the key elements, then I think this would be an appropriate time to have them. Because we would like to present to you at your next board meeting on October 7th the final plan with the associated adopting resolution. So with that, I would turn it over to you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Commissioners, any comments, questions?
No? I'd like to hear any public comment if there's anyone. Yeah.
Good morning.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
So my name is Malachi Salcedo. Our address is 615 C-1 North Wenatchee Avenue. I'm not here to complain, and I'm not here to ask for anything. Imagine that.
Wow, wonderful.
Yeah, I know.
Thank you for coming.
And now we are suspended.
I'm here mostly to say thank you and then provide a few specific comments on the strategic plan that you're in the process of forming. As you know, over the last several years, gotten the opportunity to interact with the utility quite extensively, currently we have active loads in Chelan, Douglas, and Grant counties, so I get to interact with all three of those public utility districts. And I just wanted to take the time to come down here and tell you in person how impressed I am with this utility. You are patient. I've become a reluctant expert, not a utility expert, but a customer expert. Probably no more than most of your customer base. And I'm just impressed with how patiently and expertly you explain very complex topics and regulatory constraints. How you listen to everyone. I've interacted with different staff members, and I've always been impressed. And sometimes it's been heated. Sometimes, Andrew, we've had heated interaction. Lindsay, we've had heated interaction. And every person, to a person, has been professional, patient, cares authentically about my concerns, and is trying to help me to understand the bigger picture. So, in the strategic plan, I have a few excerpts here, including at the key customers luncheon. You've done a great job of summarizing the volatility in the market, current and forward-looking, and then also the corresponding volatility. And what is the market and a corresponding rate structure risk look like? I've been impressed with that. And as I've learned more, it's been impressive to me how well you're managing a lot of uncertainty. That, as I've learned more, I've become more impressed. Thanks for including us. You've gone to a lot of effort through community groups, through direct outreach, through multimedia, like the gentleman here was talking about, to get our feedback. Really appreciate that. You're not just making decisions in a closet. You're actually really going out of your way over the top to include us. Not only educate us, but include us in the process. Thank you specifically for all of your time through Andrew Grassel participating in our Valley Our Future process, where we're trying to figure out what are ways we can do economic development, specifically focused on the tech sector in this region. As you're familiar, Chelan PUD, you've spent a lot of time and tried to help us understand as a group complex topics. So as you're zeroing in on a final version of this plan, I just wanted to express in those ways specifically my personal gratitude. You're doing a great job. Thank you for what you're doing for us, for the region. Keep up the good work.
Gosh, thank you very much. Wow. Those are very kind words. Yeah. Commissioners?
No, I just say, Malachi, you know, that an appreciation for you personally and professionally for a long time. And today's a new height, you know, in that the recognition of a process. And if you have good processes in place, you have good results. And so I feel that your comments today recognize that process that is highly valued, and it's gratifying to hear from you that that process has yielded a result that is viewed favorably by the public that we serve that own this organization. So thank you very much for that.
Malachi, I'd just like to point out that one of the goals that we've established for ourselves as an organization, not just the commission, but for all of the staff, is hanging on that wall behind your back, and it says the best value for the most people for the longest time. And the way to achieve that is to involve the people who are most impacted by what it is we do. And so it is a great deal of effort to do outreach. And there are some organizations that don't believe in transparency, but the value of both those two things are very clear, especially made more clear today with your kind words and comments. And it gives us additional strength to go forward, knowing that the path we're on is being recognized by the people we serve. So thank you for your kind words today.
Thanks.
Great. Thank you.
All right.
So on that very high note, we did want to make sure there was an opportunity for the commissioners. Is there any additional comments you would like to offer us? Well, our plan would be to go through the written comments. We think that in general, what we see are places where people are, we probably haven't been clear enough about our direction. So we would look to try to clarify some of the issues that have been described in the written comments. But the general direction and certainly the four themes would remain as they are based on what we've seen so far. So this is a check-in and a test with the commission to see if you're comfortable with that.
You know, there was an old movie review, Siskel and Ebert, way back when. Two thumbs up. That's my comment.
Yes.
As well, two thumbs up. Justin, you are doing a great job. How long have you been with the district?
Approximately a year.
That's what I thought. So conscientious, so thorough. So nice to work with. Appreciate it.
Had a big team on this, so yeah. I appreciate that, but it's been a lot of work from a lot of people, and appreciate your support.
Yeah, it's nice having you here.
Commissioner McKenna?
Appreciated the feedback, the written feedback that we had, and I find that always interesting to see the perception of people and how they're reacting to our efforts in strategic planning. Because it's you're going to get it, positive and negative, and it's always a great learning opportunity, because strategic planning is just long-term vision, and each strategic plan is part of that vision, and we get better along the process. For my efforts as a community member prior to being a board member and participating in strategic planning, I think it's worthy to just, from my perspective now as a board member, to say I appreciate the efforts to streamline the efforts from the last strategic planning process, really focus on our mission and vision, and I think that has allowed us to streamline, kind of keep us focused on what's important and where we're going. It creates a very clear vision for the future. My reaction to both the written comments and feedback in the community meetings is people are pretty clear, whether they agree with it or not, they're pretty clear on the roadmap that this PUD is creating for the next 5 to 10 years. So I just wanted to say that, again, I think this PUD is getting better at the process, and it was nice to have that reinforcement by one of our community members.
Those are good thoughts. Thank you, Commissioner McKenna. I have one question back on the theme and your number of comments. The folks that did have comments, is there any outreach back to those folks to maybe answer or address any of the comments they made?
Yes, in some cases we've already responded, but not in every case. And so I certainly do plan to respond personally to every comment.
That's good. One of the local encounters that I've had recently with some of our ratepayers in the community, there was some concern from the ratepayers about our path. But after a conversation and a little perhaps education, a little background on why things happen the way they happen, and the takeaway from that encounter was, thank you for educating me. I'm operating my opinions in my world, and I'm not familiar with how things work in your world or the restrictions or the federal requirements. And so once they were explained, once I was educated, then I can see why it is you do what you do, and their opinion changed entirely. And so that was what the source of my question was. You know, oftentimes I think when we get feedback, particularly if it's not positive feedback, that really what it is it entails, if it just entailed a conversation explaining restrictions that are placed on the district, that puts things in a different light.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I know you're very good at that. I've heard you do that before, and you've done it very well. So,
thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Commissioners, any other comments, thoughts?
No.
Great job.
Great. Thank you,
good.
Sir.
Thank you.
Okay, so we'll be bringing that back at the next board meeting.
All right.
With that, we're actually finished with the study session, and we are ready to move to the consent agenda for the afternoon. Okay. What would normally be the afternoon.
Yeah, well, record time. All right. Commissioners, we're ready to move on into the consent agenda. We have a consent agenda in front of us. Do I hear any comments? Is there a motion to accept the consent agenda?
Move approval.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any discussion? No discussion. It has been accepted. The ayes have it.
Great. We'll move on then to the regular agenda. And the first one is a bit unusual because it's a resolution that was proposed by a commissioner. Item 7, a resolution supporting the many benefits of hydropower and opposing the removal of the Lower Snake River dams. And I would turn it over to Commissioner Smith.
Thank you, Steve. As I sat here thinking about this resolution, and this may be a first since I've been a commissioner that a resolution is going to be presented by a commissioner. Now, Dennis and Ann, the two of you can probably remember, well, Ann, you can remember a couple of years further back. Have we ever done a resolution like this?
Once or twice.
Which, maybe before my time.
I think so.
Yes.
I think so.
So this is not something that's normal. But as a presenter once told me, you know, normal doesn't live here anymore. So over the last year, there's been, well, last many years, there's been a lot of conversation about the value or lack of value of the Snake River dams. And one of the roles that commissioners in public utilities have is to educate their customers. Commissioner Arsenault commented just a few minutes ago about engaging a customer on the street about our strategic plan and some of the issues that were not understandable from a distance become more clear with a conversation. It is my hope, and I ask for this resolution to be presented for us to consider, that we can utilize this resolution as an educational component of what we do here in Chelan County, because it truly, this resolution is all about, if we choose to adopt it, making a statement of how we view and value hydropower here in the Pacific Northwest. It also recognizes, if you look down through the specifics of the resolution, that going forward, as the generation of electricity, the makeup of the generation of electricity in the Pacific Northwest changes, that the additional value that hydropower represents in helping to provide a stable grid is really enhanced and really becomes of much greater significance and importance. And so I do recognize that throughout our state, the last I was aware, there are at least 16 of our public utilities that produce electricity that have already passed resolutions supporting the Snake River dams. And for us, there's not a direct impact, but I think a recognition of there's a minor direct impact. I think we actually maybe got a preview of that this spring when there was a price spike because of the lack of firm power available. Removal of those dams could have an impact on us in ways that we have yet to even understand. And so my whole premise of this is to explain to our constituents, our customer owners, why I support the maintenance of our hydro system here on the Columbia River system and what it means to the people of Chelan County. That's my presentation. totally unorthodox, I'm sure, but I'd like to move that we adopt Resolution 7 and see if there's a second, because we haven't had this conversation.
I second the motion wholeheartedly. Okay.
So it has been moved and seconded. It's time for a discussion. Commissioners, any discussion?
I'll jump in there. I've been spending a little more time in Pullman, Washington lately, and I tell you, wherever I go, I run into farmers. You know, everybody drives pickups, and most of the people are farmers now, other than students. And it's been really interesting to engage in a conversation with them about the removal of the dams and the huge economic impact it would have to them. So I have one particular friend down there who I'd like to hook up with you, Randy, to talk, to get that perspective. It's very important. But and as well, I want to thank you for bringing this forward, for shepherding this through the PUD. Really important. Good work.
Just a comment related to what I would consider to be, to a certain extent, data denial. It's very evident that, as an example, the orcas are diminishing in their numbers. And the cause is pretty clear, that there's inadequate food supply. There is such a broad spectrum of causation of that depletion of food supply, and to come and at some point and to a certain extent focus significantly on the Snake River dams as a major piece of the causation, I think denies other factors that may be as significant, if not more so, to the lack of adequate food for the orcas. And I think at some point, as an organization, what we need to be aware of is when people call for the removal of the Snake River dams, and perhaps, you know, maybe if that went forward and the dams were removed and the orcas were still hungry, what's the next set of dams? And who speaks for us? And so I think it's incumbent on us to take a look at all of the data, to sort through that and identify all issues that need to be addressed and participate in ways of resolving those issues to create that better environment in Puget Sound, and leave in place not only flood control, power generation, and navigation through the Snake River dams, but look at other issues that are a part of the causation and participate in replenishing that food supply. And like I say, my biggest concern is, it's a paraphrase, the cliche during the Hitler administration, that when people came for the Jews, no one spoke up. When people came for the Catholics, no one spoke up. And when they came for the Protestants, there was no one left to speak up. And I think that, you know, we need to speak now and speak clearly that the removal of the Snake River dams is not a well-thought-out data point. That it is a data point, not the data point, in terms of managing quality water. So thank you for listening to my rant. But I have concerns about our future as well.
I would like to take this opportunity just to chime in and discuss just for a second Senator Doug Erickson's proposal to introduce a bill which would study removal of the Ballard locks as an impediment to the previous salmon runs into the Lake Union and Lake Washington. What's particularly interesting is that he's a senator from Western Washington, from Whatcom County. And I think that it makes a pretty dramatic statement, at least to me, and as we discuss this topic today on the Snake River dams, that that we would have someone who's actually stepping back and taking a look at the big picture, that if we're going to really take a look at removing structures that impede salmon, if that is the argument, then we have to be willing to take a look at allowing homes on Mercer Island to lose some waterfront property. And so I'm pleased that at least this isn't just a target being aimed at Eastern Washington or Idaho. I found that to be very interesting, and we'll find out where that goes as it goes forward. So, Randy, I'd like to thank you very much for bringing this forward, this resolution.
Okay.
So we voted on it, and
we haven't voted.
Oh, we haven't voted. Okay. So we have, do we have a second?
Yep.
Yeah. Well, I guess second. Okay. This was our discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The ayes have it.
Thank you. We are ready to move on then to agenda number 8. This is a resolution rejecting all bids and declaring that no bids were received for Rocky Reach Caisson Upper Chamber Paint, bid number 19-18, and authorizing the procurement of the Rocky Reach Caisson Upper Chamber Paint to be obtained by negotiation. Tim Dietering will be presenting.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen of the commission and staff. I'm Tim Dietering. I'm a project manager for the engineering and project management group out at Rocky Reach Dam. A little background, if you look at the picture on the screen, you'll see the caisson, which is used to seal up the spillways whenever we have to do work on spill gates, detainer gates, or on the spillway itself. In 2014, they did some work on the lower section. There's actually two chambers. The lower section is ballasted to keep it floating in the upright position, which you see in the lower, I guess, left-hand corner. But the upper one kind of gives you a scope of how large this piece of equipment really is. So what we did is we took a look at the upper chamber when they did the work on the lower chamber and determined that it was time to go in there and essentially sandblast, do full inspections of all the structural components, and repaint the interior of that. Based on the work done previously, we established an engineer's estimate, and which was $350,000. However, after looking at other work and the complexity of this work that we've done, I increased the engineer's estimate to $430,000 prior to the bid. Unfortunately, if I'd gone $10,000 to $15,000 more, I wouldn't be sitting here with you. We did get 5 bidders on this project, which is actually quite well. We'd contacted them previously at the pre-bid meeting and asked them, if you see that your bids are going to be coming in high, please let me know. We can't ask for actual numbers. And a couple of them said, yeah, I think we're going to be coming in higher than you're anticipating, which is one of the other reasons we increased the engineer's estimate. Unfortunately, excuse me, all of the bids did come in more than the 15% that we are allowed to do an award. So what we're asking you to do is allow us to reject all bids and then go negotiate with the contractor to have them still do the work. We would like to get the work done this year. We don't anticipate that the prices would go down at all if we rebid, plus it would push it into next year, and our crews are already pretty well booked with projects that would need this caisson to do that work. So it is a critical component of the operation of the dam for doing our maintenance. And so it's something we definitely want to get in and maintain to its fullest extent. We still have the ability to get the work done this year. I contacted the two lower bidders, and they have no problems as far as being able to either one of them get the work done, because we have to condition the space inside to do the sandblast and painting. They also have to maintain the humidity. But the other thing I asked them is, there a reason why you saw bids come in higher than what at least my team was anticipating? And both of them said it really came down to the complexity of the work. There's several decks inside there. Each one is somewhat sealed from each other. So you're actually doing several different chambers within that. So there's just a little more work than we anticipated. And so we think the numbers that we got are fair and accurate, which is why we're here today. So I'll entertain any questions if you have any or comments. So one thing I did want to bring forward as a lessons learned on this, we are taking a much more active approach when we have bids, especially complex bids like this, of trying to reach out to our bidders and kind of get a feel for them where we are so that we can hopefully avoid having to reject bids. This is not something we enjoy doing or underestimating the cost of the project. But that's something I know our group, led by Mr. Velasquez, has directed us to make a much more of a concerted effort in doing that, even though we did some here, kind of find out more in line with kind of how far off we think we might be. So that is something as a group that we are planning on doing moving forward. So.
Commissioners, any questions? I just have a question just to gauge the construction industry right now.
Mm-hmm.
There's a tremendous amount of work available, and that will have an impact on the desire of companies to even bid on a job.
Mm-hmm.
And even those that bid, that will have an impact on how much they are bidding.
Right.
Are you seeing that continue to inch higher as each month goes by?
We are seeing that to a certain extent. The fact that I got five bids on this was actually a good indication that there are still bidding out there. But one of the things we are factoring in are market conditions on most of our bids now, just to see what's going on out there. But Commissioner Arsenault, you're absolutely right. It is difficult, and that's one of the reasons why we also are spending more time prior to bids opening of actually soliciting bidders. So we will contact people, whether on our small works roster, other companies we may have worked with or we know are capable of doing the type of work we do, just to make sure they know there are bidding opportunities out there to try to get a little more interest in our projects.
That makes pricing a project really difficult, doesn't it?
It does, but you know, you kind of get used to it and recognize it ahead of time and do the best you can.
Yeah. Good job.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
With that, ready to move on to agenda number 9. This is a resolution ratifying field work order change orders numbers 2-13, 3-02, 4-02, and approving execution of field work order change order number 3-03 for the third and fourth units under contract number 14-22 with Voith Hydro Incorporated of York, Pennsylvania for Rocky Reach units C8 through C11 turbine repairs. George Velasquez will be presenting today.
Good morning. George Velasquez, manager for Rocky Reach Lake Chelan Engineering Project Management Team. So since Steve already informed you of what we're here for, or what I'm here for, I'm just going to jump right in. I think everybody understands that contract 14-22 has been around for quite a while, since 2014. It was executed and awarded to Voith. So there are some previous works that I'd like to just run down that we've already approved and ratified. On May in 2017, commissioners ratified field work orders 1-01 through 1-18. In addition, 2-01 and 2-03, and approved 2-04. The total net reduction of that contract was approximately $1.168 million for those field work orders, ratifying those. On December 2018, Commission also ratified field work orders 1-19 for a net reduction of $518,000, roughly. In January of this year, 2019, Commission ratified field work orders 2-05 through 2-12 and approved 3-01 and 4-01. There was a total increase of roughly $300,000 to that. And the total contract, existing contract price, is not to exceed $20,279,000, roughly. So staff is requesting ratifying fieldwork orders 2-13. This included some periphery blade work on C9. So basically what we asked them to do is to trim up the outside of the blade for C9. We had been seeing some liner strikes, so they had to design and modify the outside of those blades. That cost was $9,097, roughly.
George, before you move on, can you refresh my memory? What is the tolerance on that blade as it rotates?
It's thousandths. I can't tell you the exact thousandths, but I want to say it's like 60 thousandths of an inch.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty tight.
Yeah, great. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard a piece of paper.
Yeah.
I wanted to make sure that our listeners today understood the significance and how technical the devices are we're working on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like the layman's term of trimming it up, though.
Trimming it up. Yeah. So, also, Field Work Order 3-2 is requested modification of the diameter dimensions on the third and fourth unit, which is unit 10 and 11. We had to request the modification of the bushings on the outer head cover and bushings that also go into the bottom ring. So they did that at no charge. We just had a request to give them the dimensions. So there was no cost for those two field work orders. However, we're here to request approval for field work order 4-02. And what we're requesting, excuse me, field work order 3-03. So what we're requesting there is the all 20 wicket gates on both units, C10 and C11, have been in there for quite a while. And as you see more use and more turn of those wicket gates, the sleeves on those both stems, top and bottom, tend to wear out. So we've seen excessive wear, and it's time to replace them since we're in the process of refurbishing both C10 and C11. So what that field work order is requesting is to fully machine both sleeves, sleeves, and replacing them with new sleeves and machining them down to those thousands of a tolerance requirements. We did negotiate with Boyth, and their proposal price is roughly $1.934 million for both units. We're planning on doing one unit in 2020 and then the last one in 2021. Through this process, there was a lessons learned, and the lesson learned is there's a lot of value in utilizing existing contracts. This contract 1422, like I mentioned, had been in effect and was executed back in 2014. But we found an opportunity to issue a field work order for them to do this work after we received their proposal on how they were going to execute this work. Additionally, Voith has the right equipment, and they can meet our time frame for the third and fourth units, C10 and C11. Any questions?
Commissioners, any questions?
George, how does that sit in there?
It actually sits like this. This isn't an exact replica.
Right.
This was a prototype of an old one, but thought I'd bring it in just to show a little visual. But they do sit like this.
Okay.
So they're bushings in the outer head cover and the bottom ring as well. Okay. And that's where they slip in.
All right.
And how many of those are in each?
20 per unit.
20 per unit.
Yes. These are roughly over 10,000 pounds a piece. So you have to have the right equipment. We've had bad luck on putting them in a lathe because there's so much deflection that you can't get those tight tolerances. So what they're doing, Voith is proposing it, putting on an actual lay of the table. So it alleviates some of the bending stresses when they're milling those two sides.
I'm thinking of lathes that I've seen in shops. You know, then you take something that weighs 10,000 pounds, and it goes in a lathe, and I'm thinking, okay, that's beyond my comprehension. I'm done. Yeah.
Pretty specialized pieces.
Yeah, it is.
Well, and I just the one thing I'd like to make sure that I say today for our listeners who might not be in the audience is that looking at the device that George is holding, obviously that's not to scale, smaller device, but the pieces of equipment that we're talking about and those that's sitting listening might think, well, that's a lot of money. It is a lot of money. But understand you can't go to Walmart and order it or get it from Amazon. Each and every one is custom made to that turbine. And so when we as commissioners are asked about field work orders and dollar amounts that seem large to the listener in the audience, understand that this is a one-off. And this is being custom designed and custom built for SLAN PUD, not just, and it won't fit in every one of our hydro projects. It's going to fit in one shaft. That's it. So obviously it's going to cost a lot of money to manufacture that. And George, you said how much does it weigh?
It's over 10,000 pounds.
Over 10,000 pounds.
Per sleeve, yeah, per gate.
And there's 20 per.
And it's 20, yeah. So it gives a listener in the audience, whoever's listening today, it gives you an idea of the type and scope and size of the machinery that Schlin PUD is dealing with in remodeling and bringing current refurbishing so that what was great for 50 years is going to be great for the next 50 years as well. So, George, thank you.
Thank you.
And with that, Commissioners, we're finished with the resolutions and ready for your action on the two items that are left.
Okay. Commissioners, we have a regular agenda in front of us. Do I hear a motion?
Move approval of resolutions 8 and 9.
Is there a second?
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. The ayes have it.
And with that, we are ready to move to manager items.
Okay.
We actually have about a half dozen today, so we're going to run through quite a few. We want to start with Marcy Clement, who's going to come up to talk about the Chelan River Biological Objectives Report and the recent review by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission.
Good morning. As Steve mentioned, yes, I do have some of the FERC orders here for Biological Objectives Report, if you'd like to see it, but I'm pleased to report that we received a FERC order from for approving our final Biological Objectives Report for the Chelan Hydro Project. Excuse me. The order describes the fulfillment of our license requirements relative to the extensive monitoring and work that we had conducted over more than a 10-year period of time. And based on our results of the monitoring, FERC concurred that our biological objectives were achieved for Chinook and Steelhead. Additionally, our report concluded that cutthroat trout were limited by a variety of factors in the upper reaches of the Chelan River. And in the order, FERC also stated that Washington State Department of Ecology, and they also concurred with our decision to no longer pursue the efforts to establish a cutthroat trout population within Chelan River, which was a big success too. We had done everything that we could and had proved that it just wasn't a viable option for the cutthroat trout population. The order is a culmination of, like I said, over 10 years of work, which included the construction of the low-level outlet to provide the water from the lake into the Chelan River year-round flows. Additionally, our Chelan River enhancements to increase the channel and riparian habitat for Chinook and the steelhead spawning and rearing. And additionally, a pump station to provide flow augmentation within the lower Chelan River constructed habitat channel. Our incredible district team provided tremendous amount of work. 10 years of the biological studies, the analysis, and the determinations, the development of 4 biological objective reports. This one was the final one. And extensive consultation and collaboration with the Chelan River Fishery Forum, which were made up of all of the folks that were signatories to our settlement agreement with the FERC license. So it's just, it may only be 3 pieces of paper, but it is an incredible accomplishment. And it's, you know, the next step in moving forward from here on, that this is what we've created and will maintain, and it provides the habitat for Chinook and steelhead spawning and rearing. So it's a great success.
I want to add to this for just a moment. We tend to focus on the things that generate controversy, and this is one that hasn't been very controversial. That's really because of the level of effort that's gone in from the natural resources team here. This could have easily been, and in fact, we're on a path towards doing something in terms of attaining a use attainability analysis through the state that has not been done before. And this was a major step in terms of being able to get to that determination. So it's worthy of your attention, even though it may not be drawing a lot of public attention right now, because this is the kind of environmental stewardship that I think reflects our values. Very critical to understand that we do have environmental stewardship responsibilities as a result of owning these dams. And all the way back from the time of the licensing process and establishing how we would go through this process, and then the 10 years of effort to implement it, has put us in a position where we are now quite close to being able to achieve the objective. Great work by this team.
Thank you.
It's Commissioner Congdon.
Yeah, great work. I'm just amazed that 10 years later, FERC is finally giving us their blessing. So we have met our biological objective.
All of them, but one.
Yes. All but one, right.
But we satisfied that we were working through it, so yes, correct.
So yeah. What we agreed to do was to engage in a process to try to meet these objectives, right? That's what we agreed to do in our license.
Yes.
So with the exception of one that we're working on, then we've done this and we're good. We meet their, we get their blessing until the next time we license the dam.
Correct. Yep.
Wow. This floors me. But anyway, good work.
Thank you.
Can't believe it takes 10 years. I mean, I understand it's a tremendous amount of work, but, you know, it's just FERC holding their strong arm over us.
Part of it really was to build and develop, design, build, develop, you know, and then get the water in the river and then study and focus on all the biological life and study and evaluate that. So it wasn't necessarily that FERC took that long to decide. It took that long to build it, design it, build it, get it going, and then study it and have enough period of time to pass to see that, are the fish using it? How well are they using it? And so actually 10 years to me seems short, but from a biology perspective. So, but it's an incredible project. And prior to working here, I've been here for 5 years. This was the project that I heard about all the time at Department of Ecology. This is an amazing project. Can you believe this? And I couldn't. And so I am fortunate enough to be able to be part of it and to see it and to live it and to work with an incredible team of folks here. So it's been amazing.
Yeah, Marcy, amazing. You know, applaud all of you guys. Incredible results to finally achieve those results that you were looking for. So what happens? What would happen if we didn't achieve those results? We just have to keep going through the process and working until we get there.
There's a multi-tiered step process where it comes down to reasonable and feasible activities that you can conduct. So all of that would be evaluated through a process, through consultation with the Fish Forum. But we did a great job planning and had a vision, and we did it. We planned it, and I'm looking at Michelle. She was there and Greg in the early stages of planning and thinking about it, and we did it.
So achieving that with cutthroat, that was not reasonable and achievable. That's basically where we're at now. They finally
correct.
Determined
yes.
that.
Yes. Okay. And it's acceptable that didn't work out. So in layman's terms, yes.
So we're looking at steelhead and What was the other one? My memory's terrible.
Steelhead and Chinook.
Chinook, yeah. Okay. Thank you, Marcy.
Yeah, I'd just like to comment on the three pages. I had a college professor, a graduate professor in history, who would lay out a topic, and all papers were required to be three pages or under. And he said, if you take a topic and you go past three pages, it's clear demonstration you don't know what you're talking about. So congratulations on three pages. I think that conciseness is probably because it's well said, well documented. And thank you for that.
Thank you.
Great.
Okay. There are other questions. Thank you, Marcy.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Next up, we've got Neil Neratsis and Janet Jasper is going to talk about some work we're doing overall to describe river operations and some safety issues, et cetera, that we want to make the public aware of.
Good morning, Commissioners. We wanted to reach out to you to let you know we're going to be doing some additional communications around river safety. We know that September levels, we tend to drop off a little bit. We also have the Pybus Riverfront boat launch that's going to be closing for, I believe, about a month and a half, starting on September 30th. So this will be an opportunity for us to get out and talk to our customers. We'll be doing so through our typical press release that will go out after today's board meeting. Radio interviews, all those typical things. Also, we'll be doing some new tools on our website. So if you've seen the lake level information we have on our website, we're going to expand that and include some river level information as well. So that should be a nice addition. We're also looking at an app that people can maybe, this is yet to be totally developed, but an app that will allow you to go on your mobile device. And if you're on the river, if you're recreating, it'll be just one more additional tool you can use. So we're excited about that. Janet's going to talk a little bit more about some other tools we're using, which we're also going to be communicating this fall.
Okay, thanks. And the app is good for Lake Chelan, too, because we do get a lot of questions on Lake Chelan elevations and levels and drafting filling. So good morning. Janet Jaspers, Energy Planning and Trading Manager. And I'm just here to talk about a project that our group a lot of different departments in the PUD have been working on. It's our two dam independent project that I'm sure you've heard about. We've been working really hard on it for about 2 years now. And so we have a couple of new systems that we're going to be putting into place on November 13th. So we're kind of getting down to crunch time. Last fall, we identified a need that we would actually need to coordinate a test at both projects. Just to test kind of this simulated closed loop system of our new software and models that we're going to. And so it's going to be dispatching the models and software are going to be dispatching both Rocky Beach and Rock Island Generation. And so we have two tests scheduled. The first one is September 25th at Rock Island. The second one is October 2nd at Rocky Beach. And with both of the tests, we're going to, over a couple of hours, draft down, maintain an elevation, and then refill. So there are some important tests just to test our software at a wide range of elevations. And also, we have our Fish and Wildlife Department that we've been looking at. They wanted to look at operation at the juvenile fish bypass at some of the lower elevations. We've been working closely with our generation, both the plant operators at Rocky Beach and Rock Island, so that they're kind of familiar with the new tools and comfortable. So we do have alternate test dates, and they're both Wednesdays, so it'd be the following Thursdays. Our alternate days, just in case some unusual condition or price spikes or something unusual happens. So I think Neil's and the communications team has been super helpful. So we're getting the word out. Like you said, we have a lot of talking points to working with our system operators if we get some phone calls, plus being very proactive, reaching out to the community. And so, any questions? Yes.
I'm just I'm curious on the drafting, how much out of the ordinary will it be from normal operations, what we considered normal.
Rocky Reach, probably a normal flex for a normal day is maybe 2 feet, and it could be up to 3, 3.5 feet.
Okay. Mm-hmm. We did go back and pull data over, I think, about a 5-6 year period that looked at how levels had changed in both reservoirs, so that was useful.
Okay. And then at Rock Island, our FERC license gives us 4 feet, and we're going to hold 1 foot as a buffer so it could come down up to 3 feet for the Rock Island headwater.
Commissioner Congdon.
Thank you. So, Janet, it's that time of year at Lake Chelan when I'm getting a lot of questions from people. Labor Day weekend, the lake had been brought down a little bit, so, you know, why is the lake going down already? And hadn't gone down that much. It was just, I think it was 1098.7, maybe 6. Anyway, no, not even 6. But anyway, so what I've been doing, and I love it, well, and then the other, what I've been doing is showing people, telling people how to go onto the website. I love the interactive map that you can use, and you can move the line and you can see exactly where the lake is and then where it's projected to be. And I'm still, to me, it's just magic how you guys can meet, you know, can stay within that really small, you know, target elevation that you're supposed to be at. I mean, it's phenomenal what you guys do. But anyway, I've shown people how to use that and they love that. So this sounds like another tool that they're going to be really excited about. So what was I going to say? I want to go back. And the other thing is a lot more people now have their boats on lifts, including my son. And so you need to know when the lake is going to be at 1097, at which point you can't get your boat off your lift anymore. So this is a great, great tool. It's going to save you guys getting phone calls, me getting phone calls, although I don't mind. And it's easier to find and easier to use all the time, I think. It used to be a little hard for me to find. We go to chelanpud.org, then we go to recreation, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And then under recreation, lake level. Isn't that the easiest way? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's recreation, which is pretty intuitive, I think. So anyway, great job, whoever designed that and the push to do that. I really appreciate it.
I just wanted to add that we have a point person on Lake Chelan. We're going to do the same on our river operations. It'll be Scott Bune. We'll have a special email and phone number that people can contact him if they have questions.
The pro that goes way back, Scott Bune, mm-hmm. did this forever, didn't he? Yeah. Great.
Well, this is going to get better because of a suggestion that Janet made a couple years ago where Kelly had mentioned at a previous board meeting, we're getting very close to having the app available, which will make it even easier. You won't have to go through 3 steps. You'll open the app and it'll be right there. So hopefully that we're going to get that done soon, and we'll continue to show improvement in terms of things that customers are interested in hearing about.
Thank you.
That's pretty close to Nirvana. You can get your Starbucks coffee in your lake level. What can I say?
Thank you.
All right, great. Thanks.
Thank you.
Next up, I want to invite Andy Wendell to come up and talk about Stehekin. We did have some meetings there. I know Commissioner McKenna attended some of those meetings, and we want to provide you an update on load growth up there and how we're dealing with it.
Good morning, Commissioners. Thanks for having us this morning. On the last large load update, we talked a little bit about some of the challenges we're having in Stehekin related to the energy consumption, both from a peak standpoint as well as a growth standpoint. So our strategy at that point in time was to open up some engagement with that community to try to listen and understand sentiments about their future there. Since September this year, the district met with over 25 stakeholders, community members, during preset one-on-one meetings, some open houses, visits at the Stehekin Bakery and the Stehekin Valley Ranch, as well as just casual conversations throughout those travels. During those discussions, we were really careful to not to jump to district-identified solutions, but we'd rather
I wanted to get a sense of the community sentiment about the power supply usage patterns and just general growth projections in Stehekin. And that served us really useful because those stakeholders that we met were very open and transparent about what they observed. One of the key themes that was reinforced by the community is the interest in pursuing all effective energy conservation measures. And while we were up there, staff was able to distribute over 1,400 LED light bulbs. Wow. I wish that solved the issues completely, but that will have a sizable impact on Stehekin, but it's somewhat of a Band-Aid on a longer-term issue. But the community was well, they received those and were very appreciative of that effort. However, there are also a realization that our traditional energy conservation programs that we offer to other customers in the rest of the county may not be perfectly suited for Stehekin. Stehekin has unique characteristics about their loads, the available energy, what they're using for fuel sources up there. So we may need to design some conservation measures that are better suited specifically for the Stehekin area. Based on our conversations with community members, we also see the opportunity in particular to switch from electric hot water tanks to propane hot water tanks. Interesting enough, there's an abundant amount of propane available in the area at a relatively low cost. In fact, we understand that they can get propane in Stehekin for, in some cases, less than customers in Chelan County can get them down in Wenatchee. So that was interesting to us, but the electric hot water tanks and electric cooking has a very material impact on the overall load. And so we're going to be looking at some alternatives around switching from electric to propane. In addition, we heard a consistent message that there's a strong desire to ask the PUD to facilitate a conversation between the Park Service and representatives from the Park Service from the Cedrolla area, which is the state headquarters, as well as the local Park Service folks, and have a conversation with them and the PUD about energy projections, not only for what the Park Service is using themselves or what their growth plans are, but also a conversation around wood policies. And interesting enough, we learned that the Park Service has a significant impact on policies around available firewood for heating in the Stehekin area. And as you can imagine, if people don't have wood to burn, which the majority of the full-time residences or the winter residences burn wood as a heat source, if they don't have that wood to burn, they're likely to be using electricity. And so that's very concerning to us. So we are going to look to put a plan together on that communications between the district and the Park Service. So we also heard strong interest by community members that the PUD look at what kind of upgrades at our existing hydro facilities are available in terms of increasing both the output and the efficiency of the resources that we have there at our disposal today. So we do have some people looking into those options. One of the Courtney family members approached us. They operate the Stehekin Valley Ranch, and they're exploring. I don't know if any of you have stayed at the Stehekin Valley Ranch. It's a wonderful place. We were very lucky to be able to stay there. But they are completely off-grid. They've got a large solar installation there, and they also supplement with some other resources, but they are not powered by the Chelan County PUD. Nevertheless, they approached us. They're interested in talking about what it would mean to partner on a sizable solar installation that could provide additional power to Stehekin. So staff is going to be looking at how to bring forward our current net metering policies and our solar connection policies and have continue that conversation with that family. We had several conversations about energy storage options. Maybe I mentioned it previously, but the district is looking at a battery storage system that would complement our hydroelectric system there at the Company Creek headquarters. We did apply for a grant, and We'll bring back some details about that application as we learn a little bit more about the probability of getting it and the timing around that. We think that might be an effective tool for managing some of the peaks, but possibly not the long-term growth projections that we're seeing. Finally, I just wanted to mention that the community was very excited that we were there having the conversations, and we thought that we might develop a community newsletter that talks about these particular issues that we're seeing and what actions the PUD is doing. We think that might be an effective way to provide some dashboards about their energy consumption. We just recently installed some new metering data at the hydro facility that can really help show where those peaks and those usages are. So we want to share that information, continue the conversation with the community, and start peeling the onion back on some of those potential solutions. So, with that, I just want to mention, too, that the folks that joined us in Stehekin, Josh Mitchell with our energy conservation team, very well received by that community. And I think he's continuing to do some one-on-one work with folks up there as well. Neil, with our communications, our manager, was up there. Neil hasn't seen the facility before up there, and so it was a great opportunity for him. And he really helped to summarize what we were hearing and feeling from the community. And Commissioner Steve McKenna also joined us for the day, the evening, and the day. That was great as well. So,
Did I interrupt?
That concluded my presentation.
Okay. I set off on Friday afternoon in my boat, because I'd been at a meeting in Montana, so I couldn't do the early vote, and got just about to 25 Mile Creek and turned around. The wind is so finicky there, you never know. And mechanically, I am really, really challenged. If my boat died, I don't know what I would do without my husband there to figure out. So I turned around, so I didn't make it. Yeah. Unfortunately, I planned on it. But I did, I've connected with Cliff Courtney, because we can text back and forth. And so we're going to go up next weekend and just visit with him and maybe a couple of the other Courtneys on our own. But anyway, those meetings with the Stehekin residents are always really, really valuable time spent. They have lots of good ideas, and they definitely have needs. And I don't know how long it's been. I think it's been several years at least since we've met with them in Stehekin, hasn't it? It might have been 5 years.
Yeah. I think Commissioner Balgren and I flew up there and met with them about 4 years ago.
Really? Oh, just the port, representing the port in the PUD or something?
No, Karnin.
Oh, Karnin.
Berggren.
Oh, okay.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, anyway, just a suggestion that we do this once a year.
Great. That's a good suggestion. I'd like to offer, too, that we do have some material that we can send up with you just to help kind of cover all of those bases. I know it was extremely windy on Friday. Our Fish and Wildlife group has a great boat that got us up there, but I can understand why you might have turned around.
Brave as I used to be.
Yeah. With that said, just through this outreach effort, it was a recognition that we probably need to explore some alternative transportation other than boats on the lake to get up in there. So I think we've got a side effort to try to figure out what we can do there, whether it's a plane that can land at the runway, or some alternative transportation.
Yeah, the float plane, Schlein Airways, doesn't operate anymore, which pretty much limits you to boat travel. So, but one last question. What percentage of the time, or how do I want to put this, how much of the time do they have outages or peak use where they have to run the diesel generators?
Yeah, so in that information that we'll send up with you, it explains some of that. But in general, the district does have a hydro plant, and it is complemented with a 75 kW generator that runs in unison with the hydro. And that 75 kW generator is automatic in terms of when we exceed the hydro capacity, that generator turns on automatically and it turns off automatically. What we're learning from that information, from the information that we're measuring today, is that's happening more frequently throughout the day. And
so it happens on a daily basis.
The supplementary generator, diesel generator, does come on a daily basis, what we're seeing at this point in time, and in fact multiple times during the day. However, there's another generator, actually two generators. They're both 300 kW generators, and those have coming on much less frequently, and those would come on when both the hydro and the diesel generator that works with the hydro, when those capacities are exceeded. Those happened during peak time frames, both in 2017 as well as 2018. What happens then is there's a manual process where the operator has to go up and turn the generators on. Mm-hmm. And that's usually coinciding with an outage, mm-hmm. but it's relatively disruptive. And yeah. A lot of questions about how long to run that, how long is that peak load going to be sustained. So that's our efforts right now, is to try to figure out those projections and that calculus and look at what we can do to bring that peak load down as far as we can through energy management solutions.
Mm-hmm. That's a real tough one. That's going to be a challenge going forward. More and more use of diesel generators is not, does not fit within our stewardship. So I know, but I'd be interested in how much of the time now, how much diesel generation is actually.
We've got some great data to share with you on that too.
We'd have some great data, but candidly, we need to change our data collection procedures here, and are in the process of doing that.
Or what procedure?
So, data collection.
Yeah.
So you have to really take the resource planning hat off that we're accustomed to and put on a new one for this problem, because it's so different.
Yep.
You know, we're energy constrained generally. We have reservoirs. We can move things around on our system. In Stehekin, we can't. Yep. Stehekin, it's when the water comes down, you generate, and that's what you got. And then you rely on the diesels when the load exceeds the amount of water that's coming downhill. So that's a very different problem, and it requires some pretty detailed data to understand in terms of when are those peaks occurring. And so the team has done a good job of beginning to think that through, and starting in August, they've added some new data collection procedures that are going to help us to better understand what the problem actually is, and therefore what the solutions are, because they're not going to be traditional solutions that we're accustomed to thinking about. The other thing that we're going to have to think about that will be quite different is it's not connected to the grid. So if it's not connected to the grid and you've got somebody that wants to do net metering, well, how do you value the net metering when there's no wholesale price to compare against? It's a comparison against what your alternative value is of generation. That's a totally new thought for us, too. So there's some, it turns out, it's a small system, very important system, but some important policy work that has to be done here in order to be able to get to the most cost-effective solutions. And I think we're tumbling to the fact of the challenges that we've got here and the type of data that we need to collect and the type of policies that we'll need to put in place in order to be able to come up with the most cost-effective solutions.
Yeah, because you have fish issues and you have air resources, and you're really between a rock and a hard place. You can only run so much water, and because of the fish issues, and then you can only run the diesel generator so much of the time because you've got, ecology and air resources looking at that effect. I mean, it's a tough one. I know it's very small, but there's some real challenges there for sure.
Yeah, I'd like to add one other quick thing too. I think Andy had mentioned there's interest there in expanding the hydro capability. I just say that there are some really difficult regulatory challenges here. Yeah. This would not be an easy thing to do, and we've got a lot of work to do to try to better understand what the implications are of even pursuing an option like that.
What's the health of the Peloton Wheel?
We had an opportunity to go and tour that, I'm not a mechanic or an engineer, but I use my perspective that it's in pretty good health, and I think we've been doing quite a bit to maintain the assets that we have.
Okay.
So it looked good.
It was pretty arduous when we replaced it. It was quite the process.
Right.
That was one of the first things we did as commissioners.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Took months.
Got ready to build it, and the town to be burnt.
Interesting.
So we're on diesel. And...
Have you been up to see it?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Good. It's worth a trip for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Just to...
Good. Thank you.
You know, I've been up to Stehekin many, many times in my prior life. But to go up there as a commissioner this time, and I won't get into any of the, I agree with Steve, very complex issue. I think the solutions and the policies in the future are going to be kind of tipped upside down to make this work. But just a couple of things. One, many thanks to the Fish and Wildlife for getting us up there. That was a rough trip up there, and I wouldn't have made it my boat either. So I appreciate the fact that you gave it a try. I think, Andy, your group was just the right group to go up there. Even though this is distribution and generation issues, this really was a community issue because they so appreciated the fact that we as a PUD group were there to listen to them. It was almost like they were shocked. Oh, you know, I'm not sure they get listened to a lot in that community as citizens, and they really appreciated that. Very interested in solutions. It was a fascinating trip up there, and the employees, Bob up there, and you guys, and Fish and Wildlife, I just want to let you know how much I really appreciated sitting in that bakery and just visiting with citizens and listening to what they wanted, and they were so appreciative of people coming to listen to them. They're just shocked. And not only the people that live there, the many, many visitors that came from around the state and around the country that wanted, what's going on here? What are you doing here? And they were so impressed with that. So I am really looking forward to that ongoing discussion. I see the need for more refined data for us to look at making policy decisions and helping, you know, for staff to make good decisions. But wow, everybody's working so hard. And the community up there is working so hard to be so efficient with that precious resource. And you did a great job reinforcing that with them and appreciating their efforts. So it was an amazing weekend. Look forward to ongoing discussion.
Great. Thank you.
Well, and to hold it at the bakery is just a good start.
Yeah. Well, I think there's one thing the PUD and the community agrees on for certain. That's no power, no bakery, no cinnamon rolls. Yeah. That's a problem.
That's a big problem. Now that's
the problem. Up.
Right. Yeah. 2 days of meetings at the bakery and a meeting up at the ranch. Yeah. I mean, I was in heaven. So.
Yeah. Okay. More to come. Great. Thank you.
Thanks, Andy.
Next up, I want to talk about public outreach that will be going on in the fiber expansion program. I invite Jennifer Pickle to come up. Actually, I don't see her.
I haven't seen Jennifer. I did message her.
Okay. I should have looked back before going. So we'll move on. We've got a tree removal program coming up at Riverwalk Park. Kyle Endelman is going to do that for us.
So Kyle Endelman, I'm the park superintendent for Rocky Reach in the Chelan area. And I'm here today just to kind of let you know about public outreach and a project we're doing up at Chelan Riverwalk Park. So you can see the area in red there. That is the south shore of Chelan Riverwalk trail system near the Wooden Avenue entrance there. We need to remove many trees from that hillside. Back in 2011, we had an urban holder write a report identifying trees and brush in that area that need to be removed. They're basically non-native noxious type trees, so Siberian elm, black locust type trees. She revised her report in 2013 after we'd done a little bit of work, identified more trees to be removed. So a good portion of that canopy that you're seeing right there will need to come down starting next week and potentially continuing on into 2020. We'll see. We're working with the adjacent property owner to establish property boundary lines. They had a surveyor out there last week, so we can identify exactly which trees are in PUD property. The reason I'm here is because this will significantly, you know, kind of change the canopy in that area. Most of those trees you're seeing there will need to be removed eventually. They're the wrong type of tree. They're large. They're going to start deteriorating and causing potential hazards on the trail as we move forward. Replanting efforts will start once all the trees are removed, so that will probably start in 2020. There's a chance we can start replanting this fall, but most likely it will happen in 2020. And we'll be replanting with native species, drought tolerant. We don't have irrigation in that particular area, and trees that are kind of smaller and more suitable for the hills. Basically, our contractor will be doing the work starting next Tuesday. They should have this year's work wrapped up by Thursday. We'll require trail closures in that section from the Wooden Avenue entrance to the Okanagan Avenue entrance right there. So that trail will be closed from roughly 7, 8 in the morning until maybe 5 in the evening. So it will be open early morning and in the evening, but we will have to close it while they're cutting the trees down. Any questions or concerns from anyone? Commissioners?
What kind of notification has gone out to the community on the removal of the trees?
Yes, so last week I started reaching out with some of our stakeholders, mainly the city, the mayor, and some neighboring property owners. We'll have trail signs notifying of the trail closure this week. They will go up tomorrow, and then we will be doing a communication blast, radio and whatnot, here this next week.
The Chelan Rotary has been very involved in Riverwalk Park, and they're vested in that park up there. It might be a good idea and a courtesy just to reach out to the president of the Chelan Rotary Club and let them know that this is happening. I think that they're one of our supporters up in the area and certainly one of our partners in managing the park and taking care of it and coming up with great ideas.
They are, and I will contact her.
Great. Thank you.
Good. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks. I want to invite Kim Craig up to talk about River Ramble. It's coming up.
Good morning, Commissioners. Kimberly Craig in Communications, and I'm also speaking for my Discovery Center friends today with an invitation to River Ramble, which the public session will be this Saturday. And it's a new collaboration this year with the Wenatchee Valley Salmon Festival. So River Ramble will be presented in the Native Encampment at Salmon Festival, and the public hours on Saturday are from 9 to 4. River Ramble is a wonderful Native American education program that was developed over the years by Debbie Gallagher and the team at the Discovery Center. And it really takes a look at how people for eons have been nourished and interacting with the river. And the other really interesting part of this is the invitation is presented by Native American people who are agreeing to share their traditions and knowledge with us. And if you haven't had a chance to take part in a program that's up in the Long Tent, that's a unique structure that the PUD helped create and maintains as part of that. And it's a wonderful storytelling vessel for taking a look, a walk back in all those traditions. The other thing that's significant about this is the moving of River Ramble. Traditionally, it's in May at the Discovery Center in Rocky Reach Park. And this year, and at least for the next year in 2020, it will be held at Salmon Fest as we go through the major renovations at the Discovery Center. And then we'll judge reaction from people who attend, see where the most impactful location is for that program. So again, perfect for grandparents and grandchildren and any neighbors or friends that you have. Invite them to come up there. It's a wonderful day. And of course, it's a free program along with the other activities with Salmon Festival. Information on chelanpud.org under River Ramble and also on salmonfest.org, which is the Salmon Festival website.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kim.
So I'm sorry we haven't been able to reach Jennifer. I'm going to do try to do my best to substitute for her, although I'm not as familiar with this as she is. So there has been, and you're quite familiar, there has been concern from some of the far reaches of the county about how quickly fiber expansion will get to them. I think Manson, Eniat, and some of the places north of Leavenworth. So the fiber team is planning to do some outreach into those specific areas just to talk to them about the overall plan for fiber expansion. Some of them will get some good news that it's coming at some point, although not as soon as they would like. And others, you know, they're in that 10 to 15%. That's really hard for us to reach in a cost-effective way. But the idea is get out and get more information out there to folks that continue to ping us. As noted earlier, it was the number one issue and the comments that came in, written comments that came in on the strategic plan. So that's the thought, at least, is to get out there. I don't have the days here or the times, but we will get information out to you.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Appreciate your proactiveness on that. Thank you.
And that's it for our manager items.
Okay. Commissioners, we're on to commissioner items, and specifically Waputa Educational Scholarship Drawing. I'd like to refer this to Commissioner Smith. Do you have any input?
The scholarship this year has changed. The Walkley Fund no longer exists, and the new scholarship committee got together, set up some criteria, which I do not have in front of me, and I'm looking at Rebecca, hoping that she might have it in front of her. But the criteria has changed. Any student who is applying has to fulfill a certain criteria. I think in the past, on the Walkley Scholarship, all graduating seniors had their names put in the basket, if you will, and were provided with the opportunity to win the scholarship. The new criteria for graduating seniors is that they're regularly enrolled as a senior, they maintain a 3.0 GPA or better, and have a record of participation in extracurricular community service. So there's some criteria placed in front of it. And interestingly, I asked Rebecca this morning about how many names were in the bag this year. There's more than last year. 14. Yeah, so with great. Add the criteria, it adds names. I'm not sure if that's the direct correlation, but there, we need to do a drawing for our one submission, and I'm not certain who should be doing that drawing.
I think that would be Ann.
That would be Ann? Okay.
That would be Ann.
I have long arms.
Okay. You can reach in. So this will be for our submission.
So, do you want to read that?
You bet. Because you haven't got your glasses. Ooh.
Pronunciation.
I hope I get the pronunciation. Lexi Geich, G-I-E-C-H, I believe. Gary Dobish. Yes. Yep, parents' name is Gary Dobish.
Great. Wonderful. Congratulations. That's wonderful.
Yeah, so that goes into a hat at Waputa, and then there's an overall drawing for the state. So sometimes people get the impression because they got it here, they're going to get it. You could be lucky.
Okay. So it simply means you're nominated to be put into the hat for Waputa for potential drawing. Great.
I think it's $1,000.
Actually, I think that has changed this year. And I think there will be a committee that will look at all of the applications because the applicant has to write an essay.
Yeah. And this year, with the funding changing from the previous grant,
yes,
that will probably have an impact as well on the dollar amount, Randy. Is that correct?
No, it'll be $1,000.
It'll be $1,000.
Same, but it will be funded by WAPUTA.
Wonderful. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Yes.
How many commissioners does it take to pull the name out of a hat? I'm just kidding.
Ooh.
At least five.
Try five. All right, we're going to move on to a proposed motion. This is a motion to set a special meeting on October 2nd, 2019 at 9 a.m. at the Confluence Technology Center, address 285 Technology Center Way, Wenatchee, for the purpose of attending the STEM Alliance meeting.
So moved.
And moved and it's been moved and seconded. All those in favor or any discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. It's moved. Commissioners, do we have any other topics for discussion at this point?
I have one commissioner item that I just had to bring up. Having just traveled recently to Germany and had in a energy conversation while on a bus with the person that was presenting as we drove by a shuttered nuclear plant, an active wind turbine operation, I couldn't resist myself and I said, what's the cost of electricity in Germany today? And surprisingly, the presenter was aware of that because he'd been talking about it, and it's 32 euros per megawatt. Would that be the right? About 35, 36 U.S. cents per kilowatt hour. More than 10 times what we're currently paying. So I got to thinking about Stehekin. What are we charging Stehekin? Oh, no, I don't even want to go there. but you know.
Not 35 cents.
It's 4 points.
So, pardon?
It's 4 points.
Is that right? But we need to, we need to be really appreciative of what we have. I think that, that just comes home to me every time I travel anywhere. But Germany has a real problem because they've shuttered their nuclear, and they're now having to consider natural gas as a replacement. So they're going from a carbon-free to a carbon-emitting resource, yeah. Even though they're paying for a lot of solar and a lot of wind development. So it's not reliable. Not stable.
Yeah, and the natural gas supply is by and large from Russia.
From Russia.
But the Norwegians are really busy developing a gas line through the Nordic Sea to Germany to compete with Russian gas. So it's really kind of an interesting phenomenon.
Great. Commissioners, any other?
When you travel.
Mm-hmm. It manages the problem.
All right, I think we're ready for delegation items.
Okay, so we had two from the last meeting. Both of them were completed. There was one about getting the rates video up and available online, so Justin took care of that, and that was up by just shortly after the meeting. And Lisa Sanders had a follow-up on the WAPUTA conference return date with Commissioner Smith, and that's been resolved, as I understand it. So that's it as far as we know.
Okay. And delegation items from today?
We have a couple related to Stehekin. Staff will provide information on the grant for battery storage system in Stehekin. We'll get some more information about when we expect to hear back on that. Andy's going to share some data on the diesel generation usage in Stehekin. There's a request that Kyle reach out to the Chelan Rotary regarding the removal of the trees in Riverwalk Park. We want to get you some dates for those fiber customer meetings that are coming up.
Okay. Any additional public comment? I see no public in the audience. So I think, Katie, are we going to need executive session today?
I don't think so.
No?
No.
I think we're good.
We're good. Okay. Great.
You can replace Eric anytime.
Just I had a quick question, and I don't know who the right person to direct it to. I really did start thinking about Sahikan when you were talking about we're going to have to think radically different than we thought. And I thought about available fuel resource and wondered, and this is just, is there a potential where biomass could come into play for generation in Sahikan?
Possibly. In general, there's not a lot of biomass development in the country for two reasons. One, it's still pretty expensive. And two, can you get a commitment to supply of fuel? Without a commitment to supply of fuel, it's hard to put up the capital. And most of that supply of fuel has to come from federal or state lands. And trying to get the commitment on fuel supply has been extraordinarily difficult. So put those two things together, you'd say, yeah, I'm sure it's an option that we will consider along the way, but it's got a couple of big strikes against it to start out.
Just wanted to know if it had been considered. That's good to know.
Yeah. All right. Well, without the need of an executive session, and if commissioners have no further comments or thoughts, then I think what we will do is we will just adjourn. Thank you all today.